When you look at the mousetrap, you see basically five parts. There's a platform, there's a holding bar, there's a spring, there's a hammer, and there's a catch. Now, if you take away one of those, you're not going to catch a mouse. It will not work. It's irreducibly complex. It requires all of its parts for itself to work. Concerning the human body, we have something infinitely more complicated, infinitely more complex than a mousetrap. A mousetrap is very simple, but it illustrates this principle. If a human being's DNA were uncoiled, it would stretch 10 billion miles from Earth to Pluto and back. Now, that's an amazing statement. Your DNA is arranged as a coil of coils of coils of coils of coils. That's not a misprint. You're wrapped up in ways you never thought about. If you stretched the DNA in one cell out of your 37 trillion cells in your body, 37 trillion at their last count, that'll change too, and it'll be bigger most likely. But if you stretch the DNA in one cell all the way out, it would be about 2 miles long. That's just one. And all the DNA in your cells put together would be about twice the diameter of the solar system, about 10 billion miles. That's in your body. Look what you're carrying around. And you didn't even know it. Talk about complexity. People used to view the human body as some simple little thing that just happened and there's not much to it. The more they learn, the more their eyes widen and the more shocked they are at the complexity of what we are and how we're made. When you look at the various systems of the body, the digestive system, what would you be without a digestive system if you were to take that part out? Or the muscular system, the integumentary system, your hair and skin. What would you do without your skin? What about your lymphatic system, your thyroid and adrenal glands, for example, your endocrine, that's what they're part of, your nervous system, your skeletal, your reproductive, or the respiratory, the circulatory. Psalm 139:14 says, I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knows very well. This expression, fearfully, doesn't mean that when someone looks at the human body and goes, oh, get that away from me. You might do that if it's a skunk or a lion, but not a human body. What does it mean, fearfully? Fearfully carries the idea of what is awesomely wonderful. What God has made in these various systems of our body are awesomely wonderful. They're not simple at all. They're all inspiring. I suggest to you that the circulatory system, suppose that were the only thing the original humans had, how would they live? How would the other systems support that? How could it support anything else? But if we're told the little amoeba rubbed this way and that way and got arms and legs and so on, all these things had to come together and all exist at the same time in the first human, for the first human to exist. And so you had to have them to, here's Adam, for example, but he needed an Eve if we're going to get here. Isn't it interesting? Eve lived in the same place he did. She grew her arms and legs about the same time he did at the same place. What if she'd been in Africa and he'd been in the Soviet Union, later called that? They never would have gotten together. We wouldn't be here, would we? Unless there were several occasions like this. And if there were several occasions where these little amoeba turned into humans, why don't we still see that today? Isn't it amazing it happened then just stopped cold? Rather interesting, I think. The most complex biological structure in the universe has been called the human brain. Now, there is no way we could analyze the human brain. One of these days, I'll get Andrew up here and he'll give us quite a bit of information on a lot of these things. But even Andrew doesn't know everything about the human brain. He would admit that. Nobody does. But what a complexity it is. And when you think about the passages that refer to what God has done in making us, they're very simply stated. But God has a way of simply stating something that is awesome in every way. In Genesis 1:27, so God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created it, male and female, he created them. In Job 38, verse 36, I hope to go to Job 38 in just a moment. Who has put wisdom in the mind? Think about your brain. Your mind functions because of your brain. Who put wisdom in that mind that functions in that brain? Who has given understanding to the heart? A parallelism statement. And then in Proverbs 2, verse 6, for the Lord gives wisdom. From his mouth come knowledge and understanding. In James 1, 5, if any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. Let me illustrate this in Mark 5. In Mark 5, we have an occasion where Jesus goes across the Sea of Galilee, and he comes to a place where a couple of demons exist. Now, Luke and Mark and Matthew all mention this, but Mark mentions just one of the demons. And it tells us that he had his dwelling among the tombs, and it tells us he had been bound with shackles and chains and pulled them apart. And in verse 5, he was crying out and cutting himself with stones, and this went on day and night. When he saw Jesus, verse 6, immediately he runs and worships him. Now, how does this man, just a man, know Jesus? I don't know that he would, but a demon would. A demon would know Jesus, the Son of God. And you know this from their further language. He cried out with a loud voice and said, what have I to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? He knows more about Jesus than a lot of humans did, even after he worked miracles. I implore you by God that you do not torment me. He not only knew about Jesus, he admits he has great enough power to torment him, and he begs him not to do it. And so he says, for he said to him, come out of the man, unclean spirit. Jesus commands what other people fear and dread and merely tolerated because they couldn't do anything else about it. Jesus is in control. He asked him, what is your name? And he said, my name is Legion, for we are many. That didn't stop Jesus. The creator of the universe is not slowed down regardless of how many demons there are. Verse 10, he begged him earnestly that he would not send them out of the country. The demon does the begging to Jesus. The demons, I should say, is the one, the legions, who are begging Jesus. There was a large herd of swine feeding near the mountains, and in verse 12, the demons begged him, saying, send us to the swine that we may enter them. And all at once, Jesus gave them permission. At once, he gave them permission. The unclean spirits went out and entered the swine. There were about 2,000. The herd ran violently down the steep place into the sea and drowned in the sea. Those who fed the swine fled. They told it in the city because why? No ordinary man could have given orders and had the demons say, yes, sir. We're at your disposal. Please don't hurt us. Please let us go into the pigs. He said, go, and they go. No mere human could have done this. Then verse 15, they came to Jesus. And notice what it says. They saw the one who had been demon possessed and had the legion sitting and clothed, now get this, in his right mind. When the demon was in control, he wasn't in control. The demon's gone, and now he's in his right mind. And it tells us they were afraid, and they sent him away from them. Now, this man is now in his right mind. Here's a miracle. Casting out demons will be a miracle that Jesus works. The demon leaves. The man's in his right mind. Question, before the demon entered that man, what about his mind? Well, that's a right mind. Where did that right mind come from? Obviously, the way ours comes from God. We're made. And Jesus put him back in a repair state that made him like he was before. It's God who gives the mind for us to work. Now, as you start looking at the brain and just a very, very simplistic reading of these things that you see here, how complex. It would take Andrew hours and hours to talk about this. I can do it in just a couple minutes because I don't know much about the brain. But just reading this right here shows you, this is incredible. This little thing that doesn't even weigh very much in our heads. And yet, look at what it's doing. When you think about the eye, we know a camera is a very complex thing, but it can't compare to the eye. Darwin once thought the eye was the most frightening part of the human body to him because it was so complex. And yet we've learned so much more about the eye today. What would he say? No one looks at a camera and say, well, it must have just happened as a result of an explosion in a factory somewhere, and it came to pass, and there's that camera. But look at the human eye. How did it come to pass? What explosion causes human eye? Explosions typically degenerate in complexity. They don't grow in it. They break things up. They don't put things together and make them work. Modern evolution has some problems on its hands because they want to say that this man came from a monkey who came from a frog. And the frog came from fish. And the fish came from an amoeba, single cell organism. And the amoeba came from rocks. Yes, scientists for years have said we come from rocks. The rocks came from a big explosion, a big bang. So we've gone from this to this. Now, I have some problems here. There were no observers that saw this happening. Nobody saw any of these happening, and we don't see it happening today. I've wondered many times, if this is how we came about, why doesn't it still occur? Amoebas are still just amoebas. Which one becomes a TV personality? I might not have said it that way. There's some that makes you wonder, I suppose. There are no observers. Over multiplied millions and millions of years. And then it cannot be repeated. You can't go to a laboratory and repeat this. Therefore, that makes it all a matter of faith. It's not a matter of someone seeing it or hearing it or smelling it or anything of this nature. It's a matter of just believing it, even contrary to the evidence. That's a house. That's my house. Not that I live in that. It's my picture. Ty will probably take this down before we send this out, but that's my house. I own that picture right now. And I'm wondering how this house got here. I'm wondering, is it an illusion? I've told you about me before. When I was in the hospital back in the 1980s, I had a ruptured appendix, and they made me push this button. They said, if you push this button, it'll give you some drug, and it'll make you'll get out of here quicker. So I spent 9 days, but it didn't speed me up any. Instead, what it did was make me crazy. I was doing Taekwondo with the IV port. I was trying to baptize somebody while wearing polka dot waders. And I was ordering Jenny to get up and make it warm in here. Then as soon as she got down, make it cold in here. I was crazy. She says she doesn't see that much difference in now and then. But you understand the point here. It didn't help me at all. But I had illusions. I've known other people that saw rats crawling on the floor of the hospital, bugs crawling on the walls. And I just look at them and smile. I know how that feels. But they're not there. Maybe this house just really isn't there. You know, you better not be telling people things like that. Maybe this building isn't here. Maybe you aren't here. Because people who treat people with severity will treat you severely if you start talking that way. This fellow's out of his mind. Obviously, this house is real. It's not merely an illusion. We're not in a desert where people see all kinds of things that aren't there. We're not on drugs where we see things that make us see things that aren't there. And there are things that are real. We touch them. We go into them. People live there. It's not an illusion. That's not an option here. Maybe it's eternal. It's self-existent. When somebody went to wherever this is, maybe that's Britain. I don't know. They went there and they said, look at that house. 3,000 years ago, they saw it. Maybe that's a house. Yeah, it looks like a house. I think it's real. Yeah, that's real. Well, wonder how it got here. Oh, it would always existed. Who talks this way? Who would even say this? That's not even an option for people who talk about how the earth got here. Because if you had a barrel full of water and it drips one drop every second, And somebody says, wonder how long that barrel's been here dripping that water? And I say, from eternity to eternity. It always existed. What would be the case of the barrel? It would have been out of water long ago, wouldn't it? How old's the sun? Well, the sun's eternal. Oh, really? The sun's running down. Entropy happens. And if it's running down, if it were eternal, what? It would have been out of existence. There would be no sun. We wouldn't be here. So that can't be. It's not eternal. It's not self-existent. And then maybe it created itself. Now we really get into some trickery. In order for it to create itself, it had to exist in order to do the creating. That violates the law of non-contradiction. A thing cannot be and not be at the same time in the same relationship. It cannot be. So if you have someone who creates himself, if you have a house that created itself, then it was there before it created itself. Make sense of that. I don't believe it can be done. Out of nothing, nothing comes, is the old statement. And if nothing existed, nothing would exist even now. And then the fourth one. Now, brace yourself. Intelligent design. I could ask for a show of hands. I don't think I have to. Does this indicate intelligent design? Someone with intelligence who knew what he was doing. Not what I would have done. But someone with intelligence put this house together, or someone's, maybe more than one, most likely, put this house together, and it illustrates what someone did, acting upon this house in this way. Well, I don't know how anybody could deny this. Hebrews 3, verse 4, for every house, you know the rest of it? Every house is built by someone, but he who built all things is God. What you see in someone making this house is what God did in making this universe. God was there and he did it. It didn't just happen. In Hebrews 11, verse 3, by faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. If you go back with me to Psalm 8 for just a moment. Psalm 8 discusses some of what God has done for us. And God receives the glory because of his majesty here. Psalm 8 verse 1. O Lord, our Lord, how excellent is your name in all the earth. Excellent means he is majestic. And in all the earth, his name has this reputation. He's our creator, who have set your glory above the heavens, his splendor in the heavens. Look at the stars, look at the sun, look at the moon, look at the planets. Beauty, beauty beyond belief. An expanse that you could not comprehend. Verse 2, out of the mouth of babes and nursing infants, you have ordained strength because of your enemies, that you may silence the enemy and the avenger. God is content to let the little baby's words defend his honor. Verse 3, when I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers. Remember in Exodus 8, don't lose your place here, but Exodus 8, verse 19, the magicians came to Pharaoh. It's the lice miracle, the lice plague. And they came to God and they said, this is the finger, they came to Pharaoh and said, this is the finger of God. What does that mean? It's the finger of God. This means these men, Moses and Aaron, had nothing to do with this. What's happened here is the finger of God. That means God has his finger in these lice that you see here. Men could not have done this. That's what he's saying here. When I consider your heavens, the work of your fingers, this God who created the universe could certainly have made the lice torture the Egyptians. The moon and the stars which you have ordained, what is man that you're mindful of him? And the son of man that you visit him. And he goes on to describe about giving man the dominion over the work of God's hands. Now, we have choices then. Go with me, if you will, to the book of Job, just a couple of pages over to your left. And we talk about God's design. And this is something that God is saying here to Job to set Job straight about some false conclusions he's drawn. He never cursed God to his face like Satan said he would, but he drew some wrong conclusions that need correcting. Job 38, for example, the first four verses. God answers Job out of the whirlwind. Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you, and you shall answer me. Job, since you know so much, let me ask you a few questions. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? What does God say about the way the earth got here? He did it. Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? And he goes on to speak about that. Down in verse 16, he talked about the sea. Have you entered the springs of the sea? Or have you walked in search of the depths? Back in this day, who knew that there were springs in the sea? They didn't get below the water in a submarine in those days. But God knew. And then in verses 19 to 21, the light. Where is the way to the dwelling of light? In darkness is its place, that you may take it to its territory, that you may know the paths to its home. Do you know it because you were born then, or because the number of your days is great? You weren't around when I made light, God says. Let there be light. Job wasn't there. And then in verses 31 to 33, the stars. Can you bind the cluster of the Pleiades or loose the belt of Orion? Can you bring out the Maserot in its season? Or can you guide the great bear with its cubs? Do you know the ordinances of the heavens? Can you set their dominion over the earth? I remember a man that I had correspondence with out on the West Coast years ago. And he told this story about a professor who came to study with him. A professor and his wife came to study with him. The professor was basically an atheist. And my friend had basically three questions for this man. He said, first of all, do you agree that something either is or it is not? Either something exists or it doesn't exist. We agree to that. He said, I don't know. He said, his wife turned and looked at him as if to say, you don't know if you exist? And she made it so hot for him, he finally said, okay, I agree. Okay, I exist. But he said it reluctantly. He didn't want to. Something either is or it is not. That's why Rene Descartes said, I think, therefore I am. Because one has to exist in order to think. See? Then the second. What is either created or it was eternal. Now, which is it? Now, you've agreed we exist. Now, it's either eternal or it was created. Did it always exist? Well, science has given up on that idea that it's eternal. And he didn't want to say anything. And he started trying to hedge around. The man I'm talking about said to his wife, don't you feel secure being out with a man like this? He takes you out at night. He didn't even know if he even exists, and he didn't know how long, if it was eternal or created. She said, yeah. So he finally admitted, yes, it was created. It had to be created by something. But not God, but it had to be created by something. Well, that brings up the third. The creator is either intelligent or unintelligent. Which is it? Now, since what exists could not create itself, there must be a creator. Now, I call that creator God. What do you call him? And that man was treated to a doctrine that he must believe in God, whether he admits God or not. But that's the same choices we have with this house we looked at. Isaiah 40, verse 26 puts it this way. Lift up your eyes on high and see who has created these things. What does that mean? Lift up your eyes and rise. No human did this. How could any human have done this? Who brings out their host by number? He calls them all by name, by the greatness of his might and the strength of his power. Not one is missing. Colossians 1:16. For by him all things were created that are in heaven, that are on earth, visible or invisible, whether thrones or dominions, principalities or powers, all things were created through him and for him. We could go through practically every book of the Old New Testament, and there would be a reference to the creative activity of God. From Genesis to Revelation, that's the thought, that's the teaching, and it's very strongly done. The earth is created with the anthropic principle in mind. I won't go into detail on this, but our oxygen level, 21%. If it were 25, fires would erupt everywhere. 15%, we would suffocate. It's just the way it ought to be. How did that just happen? We go out and we breathe and don't even think about it because God has made it just right. The atmospheric transparency. If it were less transparent, then not enough solar radiation would reach the surface of the Earth, and we, and if it were more, we'd be bombarded with too much of it. The Moon-Earth gravitational interaction, if it were greater, look at the effects on the tidal waves, on the oceans, would be underwater. If it were less, climatic changes would be unstable. Either way, we would be destroyed. We wouldn't be alive. It had to be just right. The moon is exactly where it needs to be. When you think about the carbon dioxide level, if it were higher, it'd be a runaway greenhouse effect. If it were lower, the plants could not maintain sufficient photosynthesis and we would suffocate. One of my favorites is gravity. If the gravitational force were altered by this number, don't you love that? And the more zeros you have to the right of that decimal, the smaller the thing is. It has to be a minuscule amount. Now, the way we typically look at zeros like this, we talk about a million, then a billion, a bi-illion, a trillion, a tri-illion, two, three, quadrillion, quintillion, and so on, all the way up to a decillion, 10 with these threes and numbers, and then an undecillion, if I've counted right, is what this one is, the 11 set, un, one, dec, 10, undecillion. That's a pretty good number. I like that. But the thing of it is, it's so large to the right of the decimal. That means it's so small. If God had varied the distance from the gravitational force, the sun wouldn't exist and neither would we. That's incredible. I couldn't have come up with that figure. I can barely pronounce it. But look at what that implies. And we could go on and on like this. The earth was made for our existence. It didn't just happen. Intelligent design shows that God got everything just right. The plane that flew over my head, the lights on the plane making it visible, and then the stars. One was created and the other just happened. Go figure. When you think of a statue, and you think of the man who posed for that statue. The statue is real, but the man didn't exist. Who would talk that way? The computer and the human brain. Would you want your brain to work like a Microsoft computer? I don't think so. That's enough said, isn't it? And then the city water system, the food stores, the people, the cars, the bridges, as compared to human cell. We've talked about that. The complexity here. When you think of the conclusions here, one has to do with morals. If there's no God, there's no such thing as morals. Why would there be? If all we are is a particle of dust, that dust that became able to breathe and see and act, then there's no moral force on us anyway. One woman said, if there's no God and there isn't, then we made up morality, and I'm very impressed. So were the Nazis. The Nazis were very impressed. And when they were put on trial by Robert Jackson, the prosecuting attorney, and they said, we did what our laws required in this place and at this time, the provincial and the transient. That's what governed our activities. Our laws at this time in this place required that we wipe out 6 million Jews and Czechs and various others. That's what our laws required us to do. Now you come judging us after the fact. Robert Jackson said to them, there is a law that is higher than the law you were dependent upon, that you were subject to, and that is why you're being judged this day for crimes against humanity. You didn't just go out and kill trees. You didn't just go out and step on grass. You didn't just go out and kill bugs. You killed human beings. And that's wrong. But listen, if what this woman says and what so many today are saying, then nothing is wrong. The lion eats the gazelle. And nobody says, what an immoral act. Right? People eat fruit. Nobody says, what an immoral act. But when you do that to a human being, we still cry out, that's immoral. Even the prisoners in a state pen will say, we demand fair treatment. Fair treatment? You demand a set of morals? They may not practice them, but they believe in them, especially when it pertains to how they're going to be treated. If there's no God, Dostoevsky said, everything's permitted. There is no standard of morals. Without God, we have no explanation for being, no morality to embrace, no purpose in life, and no hope beyond the grave. Creation is the foundation of meaning. Listen carefully. The reason your life has meaning is because God is our creator. We could look at it like this. Creation undergirds everything we value in our lives and in our society. It undergirds a standard by which we live. It undergirds meaning to life. It undergirds marriage. And we can fill out everything else. But it's all based upon the fact God is our creator. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then he added man among that number. In Romans 1:20, for since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made. We see the house, we understand there was some maker. That's what he's saying in Romans 1:20 about the whole universe. They're clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they're without excuse. The New Testament itself asserts proof by God's design. We have enough. And Jesus put it this way in John 1 verse 3. He's the one through whom all these things were created. That's why he endorsed the Old Testament creation account. It's historical and it's authoritative, including Genesis, because Jesus said, but from the beginning of the creation, here's Jesus, he was there. From the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. I'm inadequate for this test. I'm inadequate for this task. God is not. Thank you for your excellent attention. If anyone needs to turn to the Lord in obedience to his word, repent and be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, or if you need to confess your sins and come back to him, we would be delighted to aid you while together we stand and sing.